that really your idea of how to run a newspaper?
I don't know how to run a newspaper, Mr. Thatcher. I just try everything I can.
You realize you were talking to a journalist.
I'll tell you what, Fonzie. Since you're such an investigative reporter, you figure it out.
This is Two J's in a Pod. The J would be journalist. I'm Murielyn Murphy with WGHN Radio, and she's
Sarah Leach with the Ottawa News Network.
Our producer, Dirk Wieringa, is here. Say hello, Dirk.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Maybe he does have a voice.
Hello, Dirk.
All right. How's everybody doing this morning?
I mean, it's a Wednesday, so yeah. By Wednesday, I'm usually ready for the weekend.
Okay, so yesterday, so I was diagnosed with breast cancer it'll be 3 years in March, okay? And so I have to go to Lemon Holton Cancer Center every 6 months, and I have to see an oncologist and get scans and stuff like that. So I had had what felt like some swollen lymph nodes, and I was concerned, and I had missed an appointment in December due to not having insurance. I do have the Affordable Care Act. So I made my appointments and whatnot. So I went to my oncologist. She's like, you know what? Let's just get your mammogram and ultrasound to make sure that you know, this is nothing. Because I do have very dense breasts, which there was a time you couldn't even talk about that on the radio.
Right.
But you can now.
Right.
So I have dense breasts. So... So my friend says, you know what? I'd really like to take you. I don't want you going alone. And I get it. Sometimes people, you know, you drive by that place. You don't know what it looks like. It's interesting, right? Here's
right.
where they do radiation. This is where they do this. Here's a clinic over here. Here's the Betty Ford Clinic. It can be an interesting place.
Sure.
So she picks me up. She's about 40 minutes early. That's a red flag right there. She picks me up and takes me to Lemon Holton in the parking garage. And if you've ever been up there, the parking garages are huge. They all connect, whatever. She parks the car. We go in, and I sign in, and I do my thing. And she says, oh, darn it, I forgot my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, do you think that you can get to your car and get your phone? Because they're probably going to call me back for
sure,
my appointment.
Yeah.
I'll ask the lady up front to give me a map. So they call me back. 2 hours passes. I'm texting her. Did you find your phone? Did you find your phone? Don't hear anything.
Did she get kidnapped or?
No. I get done with my appointment, and because it was a diagnostic mammogram and ultrasound, the radiologist reads it right there.
Okay.
So I just have some cysts.
Okay.
They're benign.
Oh, good.
I'm good.
Good.
I'm good. So no cancer, nothing like that. Okay.
Hooray.
Yeah, hooray. Exactly. So I get done with the appointment, and I go into the waiting room, and she's sitting there with a coffee, cookie. She's got some books. She's all holding.
Is she moving in?
She's on her phone. I'm like, okay. Oh, you found your phone. You found your car. Yeah. Okay, cool. So I check out. You know, we do the thing, we out of the elevators, we go into the parking garage, and I'm like, you remember where you parked, right? And she says, no. 40 minutes later.
What?
40 minutes later, we found the car.
Wait, even though she had already gone back to the car once to find
yes.
the phone, and then she just forgot
yes.
after that?
Yes. I'm telling you, I was almost in tears.
I don't know your friend, but I think she might need a checkup or two.
I was almost, bless her heart, I love you. I was almost in tears, and I thought to myself, you know what? This is why I go to these appointments. I've been to Lemon Holton Cancer Center over 30 times. I've never gotten lost.
Yeah.
40 minutes. She's got the key. Beep, beep, beep.
And you can hear it echoing.
Beep, beep, beep. At one point, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to walk home.
Yeah, we live here now.
I'm only a mile away. Why don't you call your husband? He can come here and drive you around to find your car. I'm nauseous because I haven't eaten all day because I'm nervous about whether or not
sure.
I have cancer or not.
Right,
you know,
of course.
It's hot out. I'm dressed in winter clothing. I'm sweating like a pig. I think I'm going to throw up in the parking garage. And she keeps hitting the key thing. Beep. Beep, beep, beep. And then at one point, we can physically see the car, but we can't figure out how to get there. So we finally find the car. Then she can't find her keys.
Oh, come on. You're just making it up now.
I'm not. I'm sure I'm sweating like a pig. So I'm like, okay, they got to be in your pocket. Maybe. She's like, I think I put them in the bag with the cookies. And I'm just like, just find the keys.
We will never speak of this again.
So then we get done, and then she takes me out to lunch. So that was my story.
What's the least she could do?
Bless her heart. Bless her heart. So, you know, it's like, so every 6 months I have to be checked out. And that's kind of what happens once you get to the 5 year mark in a cancer diagnosis. Once you get to that 5 year mark and they haven't found anything, you have like a 70% chance that you're going to be good for the rest of your life.
Sure.
So it's kind of like this little game that you play with yourself. Okay, I'm at year three. I'm at, you know. But anyway, I got great news yesterday, but I just thought, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. Oh my, she must have hit that key thing about 100 times. Finally, security.
I was waiting for you to tell me that the battery was dead for how many times
security
you had to do it.
Security comes up to us. What's going on here?
Are you stealing cars?
And then when she drops me off at my apartment, or my house, she goes, you know, we could have done valet.
Okay. She's got jokes.
I won't do valet. Is reserved for people that are in chemo. I don't need to do valet. It's okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my story. No active cancer. I'm doing well.
That's fantastic.
And so that was all going on. So I, as I was watching the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners meeting, I'm preparing for this, you know, for them to squish my breasts for 2 hours, watching this. Sarah and I are texting each other because the people in the audience are making faces. So I'm talked out. Let's talk about the Board of Commissioners meeting.
Oh, do we have to? I like your story better.
It's exhausting.
I know. Yeah.
That was some meeting. And the tone in between the commissioners. And you can't, mm-hmm. the tone between the commissioners, when you read a newspaper article, you may not know that there was a little bit of a snarky tone.
There's always a snarky tone at Ottawa County Board of Commissioner meetings now. It's definitely, I mean, it's just, there's a palpable tension between these two mm-hmm. factions that make up the conservatives on the board, which is all but one.
Right.
So you have, you know, half are in the majority, and then like a slightly less than half are in the minority, and they're the Ottawa Impact Republicans. So they're farther right.
Yeah.
And they're pretty intractable in some of their viewpoints.
Yes.
And they make those known constantly, which is interesting when you're trying to talk about local, you know, the business of the county. In terms of like hyper-local issues, and they start talking about what the Trump administration is doing. It's just weird. It's weird.
And then instead of facts, it becomes an emotional conversation.
Yeah, that's...
There was a little bit of that yesterday.
Exactly.
Okay.
And this really came up with the Crockery Lake contract.
Yeah.
So I don't know if when we last left our heroes, this contract was approved in December, and it is a little over $500,000 in order to remediate Crockery Lake, which is in Chester Township. It's in the Chimney part of the county.
Yeah.
And it's controversial because there was no bidding process. The science isn't proven if it'll work. It was rushed through at the last minute. It was championed by the OI board. So now the new majority has gotten a legal opinion saying, well, this contract might not be valid for mm-hmm. a lot of different reasons. And when it's being discussed, the commissioner who actually represents Chester Township, Allison Miedema, who is part of Ottawa Impact, starts talking about sort of making this passionate plea about how Chester Township is the smallest township in all of Ottawa County. And I'm just thinking, how is this even relevant to what we're talking about the legality of a contract. We're having a logical conversation, you know, through line of like, we're making a legal determination and a decision and action. And you're having an emotional mm-hmm. response to that is not furthering that conversation forward. It's weird. It's just weird.
There was a lot of me. I was saying to myself, I can't believe they just said that they did this for the last. I was trying to word it right. They just did this for the last 2 years to all the other commissioners, and now they're whining about it being done to them, and it's not even being done to them.
Yeah, that was really highlighted when they were having the conversation about the corporation counsel for the county. So they accepted the resignation of the county attorney, and they appointed a new one temporarily until they can, you know, do a bidding process and pick a new permanent one. But in the context of that conversation, there were so many just unself-aware statements that were made by some of the Ottawa Impact commissioners, particularly Joe Moss, who said, I think that Kalman did a great job. Kalman Legal Group was the corporation counsel that has represented us for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they should resign. They're the best of the best. Well, they had no municipal experience when they were selected to represent Ottawa County.
Right.
This was a, they were hired in a very controversial manner with no bidding process, no RFP, request for proposal. But then they turn around in Tuesday's meeting and they say, well, where's the request for proposal? Why aren't we putting this out to bid? And I'm just thinking, is he really saying that? It's bizarre. It's like you're living in an alternate reality.
That's what I felt. That's what it felt like.
You know,
I just was like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
And there was a real spicy moment between Commissioner Jacob Bonema, who used to be a member of Ottawa Impact,
yes,
and then very publicly split from the group early on in 2023. And he told Mr. Moss that he didn't feel like Kalman represented the county's interests, and that there were multiple times when the board went into closed session where Kalman, when important points would be made, Kalman's attorneys would stay silent because, according to Bonema, they were representing Moss's interests over the county's.
Unbelievable.
And I just thought, wow, I can't believe that just was said in a public meeting.
It was unbelievable that was said. Yeah.
It was a great moment.
Wow. Okay. So they also, you know, there's a resolution urging Consumers Energy to delay the closing of the J.H. Campbell plant in Port Sheldon. That's not going to happen.
No.
It's going to close.
It's going to close. Okay. Yeah. Now, commissioners voted for it, and there's a variety of reasons why they did. Mm-hmm. I think Commissioner Josh Brueger, he did state his reasons publicly. He is anti-coal. He is pro-clean energy. He is thrilled that coal plants are being closed because they're dirty. You know, they have a detrimental effect on air quality and health and et cetera, et cetera. He's concerned about the reports about the grid stability, the energy grid stability. Mm-hmm. And he wants at least a little bit more of an assurance that we're not going to have brownouts and blackouts. I will say that this is also an easy vote for this commission to make.
Oh, yeah.
Because I I'm not in the minds and the hearts of any of the commissioners, but they know that this is not a legally binding thing that where they can demand that Consumers not close. Yeah. They don't own the land, Consumers does. They don't own the plant, Consumers does. It's a private, you know, company. And so it's easy for them to sort of say, we really highly strongly suggest that you not, you know, close this on the time frame that you're talking about.
Exactly.
So I don't think it's going to happen, though. I think consumers, they have a plan. Unless some sort of massive intervention occurs, I just don't see this changing.
There's a lot happened this week. We're going to switch gears. I did not get a chance to watch the whole meeting. I will do that later today. Grand Haven Area Public Schools had a parent informational session on Monday evening, which you attended not to cover as a journalist, but as a parent.
Yeah.
Which is very difficult to do. You're having to change your hats here.
Yeah, I always get kind of, I have this weird feeling whenever I go as a human to things and not as a journalist, because sometimes I'm worried that people will recognize me because I'm a little bit more recognizable now than I was a few years
ago.
And I kind of just try to keep my head down. I try to, you know, sit in the back wherever possible. I was in the front row because that's, no one wanted to sit in the front. That's where the seats were.
And you're kidding.
And I was like, oh, really? Okay. All right. So I had a front row seat to a very hostile meeting. I would describe that as a very emotionally charged hostile meeting.
Well, parents are going to be emotionally charged, obviously. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. The superintendent came out and started, you know, talking to us. I can't remember what her last name is.
Kristen Perkowski.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. And she's relatively new to the district.
Yes. July, I believe, is when she came here.
Yes. She reminded us of that multiple times.
Ah, okay.
She started presenting data slides. And so I think that the reality of the situation is we have a declining population in Michigan. Mm-hmm. We continue to see a net loss of population. It's not drastic.
Okay.
When you take just statewide numbers, we're talking about, like, you know, 0.5%.
What do they attribute it to, though?
Just, you know, migrating to other states, okay. Declining birth rates. Okay. We heard a little bit about that. Apparently, at least in the Grand Haven school districts, they've seen a loss in student enrollment By close to 1,000 students have been lost over the past 10 years, and they expect that to continue over the next five, which is what their current projections are showing, a loss of another 650 students. So that's an entire school's worth of students, mm-hmm. which we heard about. And I think that everyone can understand those facts. The problem is that this announcement about the retooling of Mary A. White to turn it into an early learning center, where we're going to take all of the preschool programs and we're going to create a nature-based learning program and we're going to center it in this facility. Mm-hmm. I think when parents don't know that that's coming and that's even a possibility to be happening, and then you just sort of blindside them without any notice, and then there's all these repercussions and ripple effects. That's why this meeting was hostile. So we have a superintendent who's having this very data-driven, logical conversation and kind of, to the point that we were talking about with Ottawa Impact and its emotional plea. Well, the parents in the room wanted to have an emotional conversation.
I get it. Yes.
And they didn't really care about your data slides. And so
they wanted to feel heard.
Exactly. That was and there was a huge disconnect between her and us at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that this has got to be really hard for you to not only talk, you can talk about it as a parent.
Right. Which I did. I did.
Which you are. Yes.
I spoke at the meeting.
Yeah, I almost cried when I did hear that part.
I bawled because, I was thinking back to that conversation that I had to have with my daughter.
Yeah.
And when you make these decisions before they're born, sometimes about where you're going to go to daycare and where they're going to go to school, I mean, we're revisiting a plan that I put into place 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I relied on it every day,
right.
and I rely on it now. And when that gets disrupted,
mm-hmm.
I know that I'm sort of maybe overstating it because I'm directly affected by it, but it's, it blows up your whole life, because now I have to figure out what the care plan is for my kid. She was crying. She thinks that she's not going to see her friends for, mm-hmm. Ever, because
right.
for to a 7-year-old, 2 years is
it's
forever.
A long time. Yeah.
And she's trying to have negotiations with me about which school she's going to be rerouted to, so that which friends she can see, and I'm like, oh, okay, all right. So I don't even understand what's happening right now, baby. Like, I don't know how to answer any of these questions. And so that was sort of the point that I raised at the meeting, that I'm also going to lose my daycare.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my daycare might be at risk, because I think that people will not enroll their kids because they no longer have that through line through the care as infants, and then to go to that school.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason why I chose into Mary A. White, is because my daycare is 3 blocks away.
Exactly.
And so I just don't think that there's a lot of, discussion around those kinds of things. And the school district had an obligation when they're talking about, well, we had all these stakeholder meetings. Look, I know you don't want to talk to parents because nobody wants to close a school. And everybody wants to say, well, don't close my school. I get it. I've been in crisis management. I've had people yell at me daily. I completely understand. But you can't hide from those conversations, because now look where you're at.
Yeah.
You didn't loop the parents in. And now people are going to lose their jobs. Maybe not at the school, because they said that they made this decision at Mary White and chose Mary White in order to avoid layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we know, when you have a declining student enrollment population, money is tied to each student. So the districts receive a certain amount of money per student.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the students leave, the money goes with them. And you still have all these facilities that you built to maintain.
See.
And so there's a $5 million deficit at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of retooling some things so that they can just lose staff through attrition, and they're not going to have to lay off or fire anybody.
Wow. Do you remember newsrooms when you had one person that was dedicated to covering the schools?
Oh, I know.
You'd have a newsroom. There'd be
one
person that covered, or sometimes two. If you had two school districts,
yep,
you would be assigned. And it wow. Okay. So, and I want to say this too. Not everybody has family, okay?
Yeah.
That is another thing. My family was on the other side of the state.
Right. Mine is too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to assume that you have family, that you have somebody that can come, a sister, a brother that can come and pick your kids up, not everyone has family.
Right. And yeah, I think when you're making these decisions in a vacuum and you're not really thinking about the ripple effects of, you know, how this is going to affect other things, we have a shortage of daycare centers and workers, it probably everywhere. But I know it was for certain in Michigan and for certain in West Michigan, because I am in that system. And if you're going to now, I mean, people could lose their jobs at my daycare. It could be catastrophic for my daycare's enrollment, you know, where I don't know if their business model is viable.
Right.
I have to drive in from the township to the city center in order to even have daycare. Mm-hmm. And there are waiting lists. So now I'm thinking, well, I'm going to have an 8-year-old. So do I actually put her on a list for some sort of a care service to only get her through the next 2 years? Well, that doesn't seem mm-hmm. like it's even worth the mm-hmm. effort.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to have to retool my working schedule, my life, in order to accommodate this. And I just feel like, you know, the district didn't really take any of that into consideration.
So what happens now?
I don't really know. I don't want to come off as critical of the superintendent. I think she was trying to do the best that she could mm-hmm. With what she had. She did make an admission that this announcement was not scheduled for February. It was actually scheduled originally for March, mm-hmm. and that she had heard that rumors were going around the city that that people were going to lose their jobs, that buildings were going to close. And in order to kind of, you know, put the rumors to rest, she moved up the timing of the announcement. The problem with that is that the obvious follow-up questions about what is the plan, they don't know yet. They don't have the strategic plan yet. So then this whole room of already angry parents kind of erupted and said, well, but you know that you want to close our school and you want to take our school away. And why did you pick our school? And so I just feel like it was a missed opportunity to kind of manage that moment better.
Right.
And I don't know what happens from here. I doubt that it's going to change the plan, but I think it's a really bad look for the district. And I love our school district.
Oh, I know you do. Yeah.
I'm a big supporter sure. of public schools. And so I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus,
but
I was wincing several times during this meeting because I just felt like it was just not handled well. That moment was, they wanted to have an emotional conversation, mm-hmm. just let them get it out,
mm-hmm.
and then just show some empathy. And then maybe we can kind of like take the temperature down and maybe talk about next steps. And just say, I'm sorry that you find this hurtful. Mm-hmm. I was hoping for an apology with the way that the communication was handled, and we just didn't get it.
And you didn't get it.
Right.
As a journalist, how will you move forward covering a story that impacts you personally?
Yes. So we need to talk about that.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
I had a couple of people reach out to me saying, so when is the story going up? Because I saw you there, or, you know, are you aware of this? And so, listen, guys, there's no set rule book about journalism. We don't have to have a license or a certificate or anything like that. There's no like watchdog organization that dictates like how we do this. But there are ethics. And if you are personally affected by the outcome of a topic, mm-hmm. you really shouldn't be reporting on it. I recognize in myself, I am far too emotionally invested. Yes. In the direct outcome of what this situation is. I cannot write about it. I could probably assign it out. I'm trying to see if I can get a freelancer or two to cover it. But, you know, we're still an infant organization.
Yes.
We don't have a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the TV stations are covering it.
Yes,
because
they are.
I did see some coverage there.
Yes, they are. And I did reach out to the superintendent and the communications person at GHEPS and told them that they could come on WGHN
right.
to talk.
I can tell you this. I think that the next school board meeting is going to be lit.
Okay, well, in a couple of things I was hearing around town was people were saying, well, if you would have shown up at the school board meetings, you would have known this was happening. That's not true.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was a real meta moment for me, because I can't tell you how many times I have been the person telling other people that, where with my journalism hat on.
Oh.
And then people get mad. And then I say, well, you know, the city hall, you know, like it's right over there.
Yeah.
And why don't you ever show up to the meetings? Well, I mean, I've been that person, and I'm like, oh, this does not feel good. Is this what this feels like? I mean, that was in my earlier days. I have since, you know, obviously after 20 years in the business, you they're coming to you because they don't want to go to the city council meetings. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, it's a little self-serving for me to kind of tie this point in. But again, we're divesting in news coverage of mm-hmm. local issues. Mm-hmm. And so people aren't going to school board meetings. And the parents certainly weren't before. So now the reporters aren't either. And no one knew about this. I live here. I cover Ottawa County. Yeah. I am the rumor mill.
Yeah, you are.
I did not know this was happening in my own backyard.
Wow. Were you the rumor mill in high school?
No, I was actually really shy.
Okay.
I was a band kid. So like we had our own little clique. I played the flute and the oboe.
I knew it.
And we had our own little culture, our little subculture.
You never got suspended, did you?
No. We were in the middle, like, of the pecking order, and people just tended to leave us alone because we traveled in packs. Okay. So
she never got suspended. I did. For smoking in the bathroom in high school. It was 1978.
I didn't say that I didn't do those things. I just didn't get caught.